to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
And I'm Annie Warmke.
And today we're going to talk about getting towards zero utilities or getting your home off life support. I know you love that secondary title.
I think
getting
that's goofy.
But let me, when we were discussing this, I was saying, all right, well, there's the analogy that a home is like a person on life support. And the life support of this home are effectively the utilities, the water system, the sewage system, electrical system, all of these systems. And without them, your home is dead. So,
at least in the wintertime.
Or in the summertime, you don't have electricity, you know, you don't have hot water, you don't have water from the grid or from the system.
You would have water, but you wouldn't have anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when we discussed about the airship where we live at Blue Rock Station, the whole purpose of that design was to try and be as self-sufficient with utilities as possible. So when we talk about the utilities, I think it's important that we begin to think about your home and what you can do with your existing home to try and become as not only energy efficient as you possibly can be, but also to try and be as energy independent as
right.
you can be.
Well, I think we should back up just for an instant. And one of the challenges that we have in this culture is that we build homes in a sort of indiscriminate kind of way. So it makes more money if there are lots of the same kind of houses, like cookie cutter kind of houses.
Mm-hmm.
And so the
little boxes.
Melvin Reynolds would love mm-hmm. that. And so the idea is that those contractors come into a street or a cul-de-sac or whatever, and they just go from one house to the next, and they build the houses and they finish the houses. So there's no thinking about the direction that building faces, no thinking about thermal mass, and really nothing concerning how that house sits on that land other than do we have a good view or not. So what we have to do if we're really going to consider how we want to look at zero utilities is the location. And in real estate, they say location, location, location. Well, this fits in nature as well. So an animal, a bird, whatever, is going to focus on that location, because if they get it wrong, they are going to die, or their young are going to die. And their whole reason for creating that house is maybe to protect themselves a bit, but it's also mainly to raise their young. So this isn't how we look at houses or buildings. We're just like, we want a good view, we want a good price, and we're not considering that the sun is going to hit that building in the worst part of the day, in the worst possible way, and that building's going to collect a lot of heat, and there's nowhere for it to go, so we got to have air conditioning to counter the heat. Or it doesn't collect any heat at all, so we have to be thinking about how we heat it, how we get the moisture out of it, because it becomes an unhealthy building. So what we're saying in terms of zero utilities is that we have to start with a building and look at its location. We also believe strongly that we need to be looking at the existing buildings instead of saying, let's build more new buildings. All right, so we have millions of places in this country where people could live and they're just sitting unoccupied because they're homes that were not built under a system that looks at the reality of starting with thermal mass and passive solar.
Or they may be built in a location that is, for whatever reason, considered not as desirable, whether there are no jobs there or the buildings have not been well maintained or the infrastructure of the city has not been well maintained. You know, for example, Flint, Michigan would be a good example of a place where the infrastructure, the water system that people have depended upon that's outside of their control has let them down. Well, that's affected building prices. It's affected the community. It's affected the population. I mean, these things have a real knock-on effect.
Well, it happened before that, though.
Well, yeah, it was in decline.
Yeah.
Beginning.
So the reality is that there are situations like that. I mean, if you go to Columbus to 17th Avenue, which is where my grandmother used to live, there are some really wonderful buildings there, but they are in decay because of a system that started with the banking industry and brought in all these absentee people to own these buildings who were looking for a place to launder money. And so now it's like it is a ghetto and it looks like a war zone. But those buildings have the potential. For example, if I looked at the city block my grandma's house was on and we were to say, let's buy that city block and we're just going to knock down every other building, we would create buildings that would have the potential to collect solar gain, create warmth from the sun, create coolness from lack of sun. But we're not thinking about it that way as a government at this point.
It seems to me we've got to approach this idea of moving towards zero utilities, which is our pie in the sky goal. This is the big goal that we're saying. All right, we know we live in a world that's running out of everything, running out of fossil fuels, running out of patience, as far as I'm concerned, with people in Washington and things of that nature. So you say, all right, we can look at this from a grand scale of we need to change the way we consider systems that support our cities, regional systems, large systems that are developed and move more towards localized, smaller systems. That's one approach that we have to look at. That's a big chunk to bite off and chew.
That's a big ship to stop and turn around.
Then you can say, all right, if I'm going to build a new structure, how can I approach this in a way that uses concepts that are local in nature, similar to what we've done with the Earthship, that say, all right, let's make this building less dependent upon outside sources. Don't have to go the whole shebang and build it out of tires, but you might want to begin using cisterns again when you're in a place that has rain, or incorporating composting toilets that do not rely on a centralized sewer system in some way, or using passive solar, some thermal mass perhaps. There are those for new buildings. Well, then the other piece is you have an existing building. How can we begin to make this less dependent upon outside sources for my utilities? Well, a couple of choices come to mind right off the bat. One, of course, which is near and dear to my heart, is solar electricity. That's an option that is very practical, very cost effective for almost every home in this country, really, to say, all right, as far as your electrical needs are concerned, you can transition from large centralized to smaller, more locally distributed systems of electricity. And we've spoken of this before, but that seems like a very practical alternative. What about water systems? That's another key
link. But even before that, the thing that I think we have to do is we have to say, look, this is a really much better system way of thinking with government and the people who build these buildings, because we are moving away. If we look at towns like cities like Flint, Michigan, or Puerto Rico, for example, where there have been many horrible things going on and really nothing has gotten better. If we were to say, look, we need more than one heating system in a building. We need more than one water collection or water availability in a building. More than one energy source. This is a different way of marketing the very same thing you're talking about. But we're not saying to the government, you're not going to collect the same taxes or get the same revenues or whatever. We're saying, look, you're going to be required to build less water facilities, less facilities for sewage treatment. It just could change a lot of things for a lot of people. But we don't seem to find the government or corporations to have the will for that.
Well, I think what you're saying there, though, is if you were to say, all right, I'm going to approach this within my – and take responsibility for yourself and say within my home, I'm going to look at every major system that really keeps me alive. You know, that's going to be your electricity, your heat, your water, and your sewer. Those are the main ones. And let's come up with a realistic, affordable, secondary source of this power. Keeping the systems that I already have, I mean, but then you could begin this slow transition of saying, I'm going to have an emergency backup or even a backup system when these other systems, even if they are available, But then your emergency or your backup system may transition into your main system with the centralized one being your emergency backup. Because I think what we're finding more and more, the examples of Puerto Rico that you mentioned or Flint, Michigan, is that these large centralized systems cannot be depended upon for the long haul and will fail. Now, they're going to fail in random ways and they're going to fail in random locations. And if you could predict that, you would be rich, but you can't. So just make the assumption it's like buying insurance. Let's assume something may go wrong and let's prepare for it.
Well, one of the things that we keep hearing is that there's not enough precedence for this. And I can say that without a doubt, Disney has created a precedence for the last 40 years in how they have operated their facilities, particularly Epcot in Orlando. And so they compost everything. All of the toilets are composted. The materials composted from there. All of those beautiful flowers are growing in humanure compost. They had the freedom. They created a taxing district that gave them the freedom pretty much to do what they wanted, and they were not limited. And I sound like a Republican, but they were not limited by the same zoning and the same regulations. And fortunately, they were trying to do very futuristic things that were about conservation. That's not to say that everybody's going to do that. But when so we have this precedence, we could go back and look at some companies like Disney or other companies that recycle and reuse, and especially their water treatment, like Ben & Jerry's has a really interesting, Ben & Jerry's ice cream has a really interesting water treatment program that's been around for 30 or more years. But we don't take those and march them out and say, how could we duplicate those? Because they are local systems, we always think we've got to protect the big boys. We've got to keep churning out what supports that big AEP generator or whatever it is. We're not looking at the small stuff. And one thing I wanted to mention in terms of how we deal with zero utilities is not only do we have a solar array, which gives us about 75% of our energy, and we have to do it that way. Otherwise, we have to pay a different rate because they consider us to be commercial. But we also have solar generators. And they can stay charged with a tiny solar panel. And one year for Thanks for Nothing, when we were trying out the solar generators that you had built, we kept moving them around from the refrigerator to other appliances that we wanted to see how they worked and everything. And we've been pretty happy with them. So we have backup systems. We have the ability to get water if we need it, if we don't have electricity. We have the ability to heat our home even without electricity. We have the ability to pretty much take care of everything if there was no energy available. And this is where we have to be thinking at this point, because the hot days of summer are getting hotter and the cold days of winter are getting colder. And water has become a big issue in a lot of places, not just in areas where it's contaminated, which it is contaminated in a lot of places, but also there's too much or not enough. And so all of these things are coming, whether we want to accept it or not. And being able to be in a position to have these backup systems as zero utilities can really make life so much better.
Right. Well, and I don't want to sound like a prepper or anything, except I want to be a prepper. No, but I my experience, and I know many people listening, their experience may be similar, is whenever we've been faced with an emergency that I've been involved in, people do not behave well. And government or large centralized providers do not respond adequately.
Okay. Given that, do we have to take a little break? And
oh, if we have to.
Okay, let's
all
do
right.
It.
You're listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke, reminding you that it is the end of the world as we know it.
And thank God.
Thank God. And the electric has gone out. You're sitting in the dark wondering what's happening. So and this, the point of this discussion is not to say, all right, it's going to be horrible. There are going to be these, as I love to say, the zombie apocalypse is descending upon us. But what we're saying is take realistic precautions to have backup systems for these utilities that really are the difference between life and death in an emergency. You need water to survive. You need electricity. You need heat in the wintertime. You need cool in the summertime. These are things that you are dependent upon. You know that you cannot rely on outside sources to make sure that you're always given these.
So why not? Nobody's showing up. That's for sure. We see it again and again.
And so let's simply try and create our habitats in such a way that there is a greater assurance that these systems will not be interrupted.
Well, one of the challenges, too, is that this takes some revenue and it takes some planning, and maybe lots of us don't have those as options. But we do have neighbors, we do have family, and people can work together on these things. Even if I say, all right, we can't all afford to have a backup system, but maybe one person's house is bigger or better or more insulated, so everybody would work together to figure out how could we have this as our emergency place to go to if it's too hot or too cold.
You should probably let your neighbor know that you're planning on using their living room as your emergency bunker in case of a problem. Let's go to the Rowensteins. Yes, they probably have – oh, they won't mind. We'll just sleep in their living room. So, all right. So, yeah, a little bit of planning ahead of time. All right.
Well, I think it's a little more than that. But anyway, because I see, you know, sometimes we're driving along and I see these people's houses and I think, how in the world are they living in them in the weather that we have? Mm-hmm. I remember years ago when I was a farm woman over on the other side of Albany, Ohio, and I sold Avon, which is hard to imagine. And some of the homes that I went to that were on the route that I took over just amazed me. People who were still burning coal, and granted, this was before dirt was invented, so it's mm-hmm. a long time ago. But you could look through the walls. My first mother-in-law, the snow would blow in the bedroom. They had a big house, a nice big farmhouse.
So what you're saying is, of course, one of the very first ways is to make your homes as efficient as possible, given the systems that you have. Okay, that's the low-hanging fruit. Let's go towards insulating, you know, fixing your windows, putting plastic over the windows if you have to, those kind of things. I mean, we know people in the wintertime who block off portions of their house.
Like us?
Like us? No, not intentionally. It's just snowdrifts coming in through the
But one thing I wanted to say is, like, with the tiny house project we've been working on at Blue Rock Station, we decided that we would not use conventional insulation. We don't – first of all, the cotton insulation, we don't know who's producing that. It may be five-year-old children in Egypt, which is apparently the case for lots of cotton coming out of Egypt. Or it might just have chemicals in it. So we decided we were going to use what we know how to do. And so we've been creating this hay – cob-coated, so earthen, you know, mud-coated hay that we ram down into the wall cavities, the between the tubifores, and the R factor is pretty good. And then we also experimented with making some blocks that are sort of like small cement blocks, but they're much lighter. And we're interested to see how that's going to work. Now, you know, all we're doing is filling in space, but we're trying to fill in space in a way that uses what we have and also creates a good insulation. I'm sure that wouldn't pass in Clintonville, Ohio, and maybe it won't pass where we live, but it doesn't make sense why it wouldn't, because it's flame retardant, it can't get oxygen, so it can't burn, and it's a good insulation.
All right, well, and that's getting way out there as far as once
you
get into.
Well, we are way out there.
Yeah, well, and I know that. Way, way out there.
That's right, extremists.
But that brings up the point. The whole concept of tiny house is about limiting your footprint. And
if you have 50,000 or 100,000 or 150,000,
well, a lot of these people spend way too much on it. And our project is one that is trying to do this on the cheap. But you say
frugal.
On the frugal? That doesn't sound as good. So anyway, so we say, all right, if you are designing from scratch, why not design redundant systems and make them as sustainable?
What's redundant system?
Redundant, like I have two sources of water. I have two sources for my sewage. I have multiple sources for my electricity. All of these things that if one fails, you have a backup. And,
well, just let me say, anybody can have a humidor bucket. You can find a five-gallon bucket just about anywhere, and you can find sawdust or wood chips just about anywhere, or you could shred newspaper to make yourself a humidor bucket if you don't have proper sewage, and then you just want to have some place where you can put it so it can decompose properly, and it's perfectly mm-hmm. good compost.
Your neighbor's living room would be an example.
I think when you're what did you call them? The Rowensteins.
The Rowensteins. We're coming to stay, and oh, we brought you a gift. Here you are.
Some so. Future compost. Uh-huh,
that's right. For your, I couldn't find flowers, but soon they will be flowers. All right. So if we talk about other than the Rowensteins, we have.
Do we know anybody named Rowenstein? I've never heard
no
the name.
Idea.
Thank God.
All right. So we've talked about some water systems. Now, amazingly, water falls out of the sky in most places where people
usually.
Live.
Although and water can fall out of the ceiling, too, believe me.
Let's hope not. So you have cisterns. That's a viable option. You have rain barrels. If you're talking about emergency backup water, a rain barrel is not such a bad thing to have 55 gallons of water that is available in emergency. You'd need to have some way of filtering it.
Well, maybe
like
not
that.
If you had a lid on it so mosquito larvae don't get in. It's probably perfectly
but
clean.
But even just a Brita, one of those passive Brita water filters. So even something as basic as that is say, all right, if the water went out right now, what would I do? Well, most people's reaction in our modern society, let's drive down to Kroger's, let's buy this silly bottled water. But then no matter how fast you do it, you're the last one there. You know,
well,
when
even
it's
if
all
you're not, it's
out.
Not good water. But here's right. the thing that you're talking about, and this is what we've been talking about in every show, and that is you got to have a plan. So who in their right mind is going to wait until the storm is coming to have a plan? And it's the same
most
problem.
Most of America.
Well, most of America. All right, so we're not in our right mind, and we know that right now. We're in a flux. And okay, so we are. But this is not about our current government. This is about lifestyle. And we have lived as if whatever happens, something's going to come and take care of us. So we've lived without planning. People do not have any backup. It gets 10 below zero, and the electricity goes out because the grid is not able to keep up. Or they have brownouts, so it's a rolling brownout, and you don't have electricity to run the furnace fan, whatever that is. We can have a plan. We can think through what should we do, and then we are prepared, and so no matter what happens, our life is not in danger. The pipes to our house are not in danger. Our pets are not in danger. Our children are not in danger. Why are these things not motivating most of us to create some kind of emergency plan that says, look, the electric grid goes down, the storms come, the hurricane's coming, whatever that is. I mean, we lived in Florida. Every year when the hurricanes would come, people would make a mad dash. There would be backed up traffic at the gas stations and the grocery stores.
And the liquor store.
Well, that's true. Mm-hmm. But I would wonder to myself, even in those days when I didn't have a proper garden, don't people have extra food? Don't they have extra water? I mean, we had a bathtub. We could fill that up. I just really didn't understand that humans seem to just think it's all going to work out fine and somebody's going to show up and make it all okay. Well, our moms aren't able to do it. They're not even able to do it for themselves. So why would we think the government's capable?
Well, I think, we've been focusing a lot on the emergency and how to respond to the emergency. I want to kind of direct us back a little bit to just making this, again, part of your lifestyle. It's almost like exercise, you know. It's like we know it's good for us. It takes some effort, takes some energy. You'll be healthier. You'll be happier. How can we change our lifestyle to incorporate or to move ourselves towards this goal of zero utilities? Conservation, we've mentioned, having redundant systems.
Well, knowing what we use.
We really don't have
that awareness of looking at our energy bills and our sewage bill and our water bill and say, all right, what is it we are really using and what could we do to influence that? I would guess that a lot of people, they know how much they're paying, but they really don't know how much they're using. One of the first steps if you want to change your energy use, for example, to get a solar array or some kind of other a wind turbine, is to say, well, how much energy am I consuming and what will I need to consume in the future if I'm building a house or I'm building more of my house or I'm going to get an electric car, whatever that is. So it's really, again, that honest knowledge of what is it I'm consuming, how much of am I consuming, and where do I want to be with that? Everybody would like to have less of a bill, but what if we just actually had less consumption? as you like to point out, if we look at energy consumption in the U.S. and we compare it to energy consumption in Europe, they only consume about 50% of the energy that we do, yet their lifestyle is actually higher than ours. So what can we do differently? Well, awareness is the first thing. I think a lot of these new systems that are coming out that are smart, like smart systems that will show you how much you're using, and then they'll turn off your electricity at a certain point for the water heater, or they'll heat the water at different times of the day. I mean, you can do something as simple as installing a gizmo onto the hot water tank so it turns it off at different times.
It's a timer.
Oh, a timer. That's yes. I just couldn't think of the word.
I hate to get that technical on you, but yes, it's
just
a little
I was looking at
timer.
That handsome face and the word just went right out of my head.
That happens a lot.
So installing a timer, which we have had a timer for about 7 years or so, but it isn't attached to anything, and I've always wondered about that.
It's because the installer has other projects on the agenda, but when the zombie apocalypse hits, the very first thing we'll do is put a timer on our hot water heater.
I'm going to feel better about that.
Mm-hmm.
All
so
right.
will the zombies.
So. Apocalypse.
Okay. All right. Speaking of sewer systems, another thing you were talking about as far as the humanure, there's a great book called the Humanure Handbook that will tell you all of the issues around dealing with emergency sewage issues. The solar generator that you mentioned, we have used that in the past, and it's kind of a nice little thing. You know, you can think about running out and buying a gas or a diesel generator. Problem you're going to have with one of those is, of course, fuel availability. And in a situation where you know how that is, you go to use the generator and it's
say,
not
will
going
it
to
start?
Work.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also, we were able to move ours right into the living room because it gives off no noise, no fumes, nothing right. of that nature, and run the refrigerator off of that, move it over, run the well pump off of that. It's our cistern pump for us. Move it, put it on the freezer so that your food isn't spoiling. You do have water. You do have some source of electricity to charge your mobile phones if that's a teenage girl in the house and that's the biggest crisis du jour.
Well, it might be a big crisis, Jay.
Yeah,
it
you
might
need
be
emergency
really
communications.
Yeah.
But it does give you that sense that I do have some sort of backup here.
Well,
that
that's an insurance policy. I call that homeland security. You know, we like to think that the government's providing homeland security, but I think we can do these things for ourselves. And I feel like the generator, you can't go wrong because it hardly has any moving parts. And the panel sits outside, and so maybe it's raining today, but within the next day or two, there's going to be some sun. But even if there isn't, it's still charging. As long as there's light out, it's charging. So, you know, I think these are all simple little things. Some of them cost money. Some of them really don't. I think the utility electric company will help you with the timer.
All right. Well, you have been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. Thanks for spending a bit of time with us. And as your grandmother probably told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is...
play nice with others, clean up your own mess, and eat your vegetables.
And her children will be happy.